Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello everyone, I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism. Give it all a good, hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to everyone out there. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining me for yet another round of yummy cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo in a world where we ask, does anyone really know what's going down? Should we smile or wear a frown? Why are the rhinos sitting on their buns instead of going out and blasting with their guns? Should we bring back sorcerers and crones to break the spell of those dreadful smartphones? And here's a question that's current and debatable. Is Nancy Pelosi's wretched body toxic or biodegradable? As always, my darlings, we try to do this with as much dignity and decorum as can be mustered on any given day. Some days it works, some days not so much, but we are honor bound to give it our best shot. And on this show, the Metaphysical Martini Show, we do love the odd shot now and then. Yes, we do. In fact, let me have a little sip of this drinky poo and see if it's a winner or a sinner. Hold on, my darlings, don't go away. Sipping is happening. Oh, that is just lovely. Oh, I could drink that all day long. Oh, hello, martini heads. Hello, everyone. If you are joining us for the first time, be advised this show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. Now, if you believe in CRT, PC, DEI, BLM, Antifa, and so forth, this show is not for you. So do yourselves a favor and move along now. Move along. Nothing to see here. This show is for sovereign souls, for free thinkers, for patriots, and also for plinkers. You see, martini heads are simple folk. We believe in common sense, common decency, and common courtesy. We believe America has a sacred purpose in our planet's awakening and are therefore fully committed to the restoration of the American Republic and the complete and utter obliteration of deep state ideology and the dismantling of all deep state machinery. And we believe all of this has to come from a very high vantage point, namely our spiritual center. And I'm not talking about religion. If you're religious, good for you, whatever. I believe that religion is a human construct, a man-made construct. And I believe that man is a divine construct made by God. You don't need religion to know what God is all about. But hey, fair dues, do your own thing. On today's show, we have Quack, questions, answers, and comments. And that's always the meat of our show. Or if you're a vegetarian, that is the nasty little tofu of our show. And we will follow that with weird and wacky tidbits, which will include some awesome American civics and history. Normally I do a silly poem, but it's Memorial Day coming up, so I'm going to do a serious poem, and we will end with my favorite part of the show, the cocktail du jour, mes amis, because, mes amis, Metaphysical Martini is where the Holy Spirit meets top shelf distilled spirits, and what a lovely combination that is. Without further ado, dun, 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 let's get on with the show and let's start with questions, answers, and comments. Folks, if you would like to share the magnificent morsels of your mind with martini heads worldwide, send your emails to me at ani@aniavedisian.com or via snail mail to Cosmic Ani, P P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, USA. And please let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as Omit Personal Details. Well, let's shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, shaky, la 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 la, shaky, shaky. Man, this is such a good drinky poo. I'm smacking my lips here. All right, our first missive is from Jude, and Jude says, Dear Mad Shaman, I love your podcast. You are brilliant. You should have your own national radio show. In fact, I think you should be the next president of the United States. You would sort out the true from the poo in seconds flat while building an impenetrable border wall to the south and also to the north. I also think it would be a good idea if you rewrote the Constitution in rhyming couplets. It would be easier to understand and certainly easier to remember and recite. So keep up the good work and God bless America. See, people, I need more of this kind of mail coming into my mailbox. This is a brilliant letter. Jude, I am glad you enjoy the show as much as I do. And I agree, I should have a national radio show. I should. I'm that good. But you see, when it comes to being the president, I am a naturalized American, so not eligible for the top spot. And to be honest, I would make a terrible president for so many reasons, not the least of which is I'm not going to play the long game. I would just round up all the idiots and assassinate them. And that probably, you know, isn't the right thing to do. But that's what I would do, and that's why I'm not going to be president. But as for paraphrasing the Constitution, using rhyming couplets, I could do something with that. You know, maybe I could start with the Bill of Rights. Let's see if we can figure something out off the top of my head here for the first 10 amendments. The first says, I can speak as I please. It's not my problem if folks are displeased. The second says, I can own and use my guns. If you try to take them, I'll stick one up your buns. The third says, your troops cannot be quartered. It's my private home. It's my bricks and mortar. The fourth says, no surge, no seas without a warrant. To do otherwise is uncool and abhorrent. The fifth protects civilians by requiring a grand jury. This protects us all from the establishment's fury. In criminal prosecution, the sixth protects the accused, a speedy trial, and respect must be used. Seventh covers juries in civil cases, a page from English law. It covers many bases. What does the eighth do? Damn. Oh, yes, bail and fine. The eighth protects from excess in bail or fines or sentence. For justice to be served, we must be fair to all defendants. The ninth says, if there's something we left out, there's a lot of legal room for us to talk it out. And the tenth deals with the rights of states. The feds can do their thing, but the states can pull their weight. And that concludes my wrap on the Bill of Rights today. I wish you all a very, very, very lovely day. Jude, thanks, man. I hope you have a great life, because obviously you have great taste and you rock. And by the way, that was just something a little off the cuff. Now, wouldn't it be a good idea if we asked our school children to do something similar? You know? Like read the Bill of Rights, read the Constitution, study the Constitution, you know, as a family. Do you remember families? We used to have families once upon a time. And then you could ask them to write a poem about what they think it means, or, you know, a little ditty, or perhaps, you know, a short paragraph, and set it to music. People love that. Okay, thanks, Jude. Let's take another email. Let's do it, because that's what we're here for, really, isn't it? I just have to say one more time, I thought that was pretty damn good, you know, the Bill of Rights in couplets. Excellent idea. Moving on, this is another email, and this is from Consuelo. Hello, Consuelo. And Consuelo's in San Diego. And she says, I heard a rumor that America and Canada will become one nation. Do you have any information on this? Consuelo, there have been rumors, of course. In fact, there's nothing but rumors. That's what a misinformation war is all about, really, isn't it? Rumors. But I suspect you heard that from Benjamin Fulford, benfulford.com, a man who makes some very good points and connects quite a few dots, but in my opinion, is not all that accurate. Now, from my vantage point, and let's bear in mind I am only 5'1", but from my vantage point, I can't see it. I cannot see it. Empires rise, empires fall, and they reform themselves, and that's the way of the world. But right now, since our sovereignty is the thing under attack, we're pushing for a return to sovereignty. So, in my opinion, the Canadians need to reclaim their identity from their puppet administration, and Americans need to reclaim their identity from their puppet administration. So merging the two right now, I wouldn't do it if I was ruler of the world, because it would be a disaster on many levels. And then, of course, if we did merge America and Canada, there is an issue with Canadian beer. Do we really want that as part of America? I mean, Canadian beer. I mean, come on. I mean, where does one draw the line? Consuelo, I know about as much as you do right now. So let's concentrate on exposing and destroying the deep state, and then we can move on to phase two. What else is in here? Oh, yes, occasionally we get a nice little postcard, and I do like those. People send me questions when they're on vacation or whatever. So this is a postcard from Galina in Vancouver, BC. So that's the Canadian one, not the one in the Pacific Northwest. And Galina says, what are your thoughts on the leader of the opposition? I assume since you're writing from BC, you are you're referring to Pierre Marcel Poilievre, or however you pronounce it, chef de la loyale opposition de Sa Majesté. I find his energy unsettling. I believe he is compromised, as most politicians are. But I feel that he thinks he can overcome that. I watch him, and I see that he is setting himself up as the perfect kingpin for a coalition. So he's also, I mean, we can't deny he has united the Conservatives in Canada after they fell apart. And, you know, they fell apart when pretty boy Trude Ooh La La, look at my tight little butt, and his Liberals worked their magical propaganda on the poor old Canadian people. So Poilievre, however you pronounce that chap's name, makes all the right noises. And he speaks actually quite well at rallies. I've got to give him that. I shall watch him closely, Galina. The Conservatives love him, and I feel very strongly they are grooming him, ironing out what they believe to be the rough spots. But they're not really rough spots. You know, people are just so very feeble-minded and snowflakey these days. He's just rather abrupt and blunt, rather like me, really. He has distanced himself from far-right groups. I suspect he's been told to do that. But what does that mean these days? I mean, far-right groups apparently these days are straight married white people who bless their food before meals. Oh my God, we have fallen far from the tree of common sense, haven't we? Anyway, I appreciate the question because I have been watching him. We all doubt, you know, is he, we doubt everything now, don't we though? We say, is he controlled opposition? I don't know, I don't know. But I shall watch him very, very closely. Thank you, Galina, in Vancouver, BC. What else came in this week? Let's shuffle the old fishbowl and see. Here's an email from Edward in Ontario. What's with all the Canadians this week? Cosmic Reality Radio must have boosted its Canadian bandwidth. Edward has an interesting question. Edward? Edward says, Ani, the Iranian president, accident or murder? Well, Edward, let's think about this for a very long time. I've thought about it. It was murder. Murder most foul. So let's see what Reuters said about this. Because Reuters, I do have it here somewhere. Hold on, don't go away. May 20th, a couple of days ago, Reuters put something out from Dubai. Here it is. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, a hardliner seen as a potential successor to Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, was killed when his helicopter crashed in poor weather in the mountains near the Azerbaijan border, officials told state media on Monday. The charred wreckage of the helicopter, which crashed on Sunday carrying Raisi, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdol Ahanian, and six other passengers and crew, were found early on Monday after an overnight search in blizzard conditions. Okay, so we'll give them that there were blizzard conditions. But moving on with Reuters, Supreme Leader Khamenei, who holds ultimate power with a final say on foreign policy in Iran's nuclear program, said first Vice President Mohammed Mokhber would take over as interim president. I announce 5 days of public mourning and offer my condolences to the dear people of Iran, Khamenei said in a statement. The crash comes at a time of growing dissent within Iran over an array of political, social, and economic crises. Iran's clerical rulers face international pressure over Tehran's disputed nuclear program and its deepening military ties with Russia during the war in Ukraine. So since Iran's ally Hamas attacked Israel, or so we're told, on October 7th, provoking Israel's assault on Gaza, conflagrations involving Iran-aligned groups have erupted throughout the Middle East, and a long shadow war between Iran and Israel broke into the open last month with tit-for-tat exchanges of drone and missile fire. An Israeli official who requested anonymity, who could be anybody or nobody, told Reuters it was not involved in the crash. Oh, we believe you. Of course we do. Oh, Mossad never does anything bad. And the U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said he had no insight into the cause of the crash, adding that the United States had no part to play in it. Well, darlings, we all know that the CIA and Mossad have never worked together to assassinate anyone or to cause trouble in this world. Anywho, my babies, under the Islamic Republic's constitution, a new presidential election must be held within 50 days. Okay. Thank you, Reuters, for that enlightening report. Here's mine. It was no accident. The whole thing is very, very smelly. Poo. Very smelly. Thus far, I have to say, the Islamic State is being very calm about it. And the Islamic State is not as stable as it once was. Everyone wants a piece of the pie. And I have no doubt the USA and the Zionists were involved in the attack. Such interesting times we live in, darling. I mean, honestly, it's hard keeping up with who, what, where, how, and why. But we try. And when it gets too much, we can always employ a little creative mixology and chill out. And no doubt, Edward is chilling out with a nice cold Canadian beer. And you know what? I am so sorry I disparaged your beer. That was very rude of me. Now there is, I'm just going to have to say, there is one Canadian beer I really, really like. And it started off as a microbrew, and I think now it's more of a macrobrew, but it's called La Fin du Monde, The End of the World. Very fitting name for today. It's fruity, it's malty, and at 9%, much stronger than I like for beer. But this one has such a lovely flavor, I cannot resist it. Thank you for writing in, Edward. And let's both drink to better days and the restoration of sanity in both of our countries. Alrighty, time for a sip of my drinky. Thirst quenching and finger licking good. Shall we take another question? Oh, heck, why not? Let's do it. And this is from Omit Personal Details, who asks. Oh, yes, I remember this one. Okay. Many are comparing Trump to Hitler. What do you make of this? Oh, how many times do I have to answer this question? Well, no, actually, thank you for writing in. I will answer this question as many times as it takes for people to put something sensible in their brains. I think for starters, anyone comparing Trump to Hitler heard it on television and just went with it. Ooh, that sounds like a clever thing to say. I heard it on television. I'll just compare Trump to Hitler. Other than both of them being alpha males, there is no similarity. Hitler had tunnel vision. Tunnels are dark places, and dark places attract dark entities. Trump turns the lights on in the tunnel, exposing those dark entities, giving them no place to hide. What we cannot deny is that both men have a certain undeniable charisma. They do speak well at rallies. Their presence is mesmerizing. Now Trump, Big Daddy T, the boss of Big T, is using his charisma for the good of mankind, for a return to sovereignty. Hitler thought he was working for the good of mankind by cleaning up all he thought was undesirable. But his dream was a unified Europe with Germany at the helm, thus the European Union, which I have objected to fiercely forever and still object to because one way or the other it serves the cabal and the one world government agenda. He had some very good ideas, did Hitler, but those ideas were for Aryans only. And the concept of a master race? Dear God, human people, will we ever grow up a master race? What is a master race? That concept is as bizarre as calling Jews God's chosen people, which is a load of rubbish. No one people are chosen over another in that way. The God of our universe is not human, does not have petty anxieties and ego-driven agendas. MAGA is not a Hitler-esque movement. And it can never be, because we have hundreds of ethnicities here in the home of the brave and the land of the free. And the point of it all is that we share a common libertarian ideology. MAGA only excludes those who despise America and the American way. And quite frankly, if your religion is at odds with our Constitution, you should not be a citizen of this country. Go back to a place where you can practice whatever it is that you're preaching. And that's really all I have to say on the subject today, because you know me, darlings, I will talk forever on this. I hope that, I hope that cleared it up. And if, by the way, if that didn't clear it up, tune in to my Cosmic Conversation on Saturday, May 25th at 5 p.m. Pacific time, where I will be doing a presentation, an overview of Nazism and the occult. And you'll learn the different types of mesmerizations available. And you'll see that Trump is the right guy for the job here and not evil and not dark. Moving on. Da, 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 da. This one, let's take this one. Let's take it. Shall we take it? Let's take it, Ani. This is from a chap named Meat Hook. Let's hope Meat Hook is a butcher and not a serial killer. Okay. Meat Hook wants to know if I have ever purposefully summoned a demon. Wow. No, Meat Hook. Why on earth would I do that, you big silly? I have encountered many a demon, from, from the little tiny hive mind bugs to a formidable captain demon, but would I purposefully channel or summon one? Dear God, no. One has to be so careful with this sort of thing, Like attracts like. Now, most of these little demon buggers are very clever. They're older than humankind, and they can play merry hell on your psyche. So avoid at all cost, unless you are in the demon busting business. And even then, your career span is a short one, I assure you. Very few escape without some damage to their sanity. And most have addiction problems or die young from sudden onset of some condition or another. Meat Hook, darling, you have been warned. Stay chill, good buddy, and please, when it comes to demons, don't be a dick. All right, let's take another question, maybe two. Let's see how we go today. Let me have a little drinky poo. It's a little dry here. Hold on. Oh, yeah, this drink is definitely a keeper. All right, what have we got? This is from Jane in Toronto. Again, Canada. Oh my God, Canada. Jane says, how can we be sure there will be no nuclear war? I know, Arnie, you said God of this universe put the kibosh on nuclear explosions, but how can we be sure? A decent enough question, I think. Jane, I don't know how to answer that. Should we ask God to reassure us? I mean, I guess we'll find out, darling. Given the madness today, though, you know, with all the itchy, dirty fingers gung-ho to exterminate something, I think we would have had a nuclear explosion by now if the kibosh was actually a load of tosh. That's assurance enough for me. And if I'm wrong, well, you know, I'll see you on the other side. That said, though, I really just don't see a nuclear war. I don't think it can happen. I do know for a fact, as factual as I can be, that the Creator has allowed the God of this universe to put a kibosh on. So one of the other reasons is that I just don't think there's going to be a nuclear war. Because if, you know, there's so many itchy fingers out there. There's so many people who want to kill each other and destroy each other. You think that Hezbollah, Hamas, and all those people, and the Mossad, and they wouldn't have put nuclear nukes out by now? That's why I don't think it's going to happen, because it would have happened by now. And if I'm wrong, well, you know, I'll see you on the other side. But the main reason that nuclear bombs have been banned by Creator and God, it's not for anything moral. It's because the nuclear explosions, they really mess up our light bodies, and it makes it very difficult to retrieve information. And the process is traumatic for the individualized soul to be debriefed after mortal death. Again, it has nothing to do with morality. We still have enough ordnance to blow each other up 100 times over. So I'm not worried about nuclear war. Of everything else that's on my list to worry about, actually, I'm not worried about anything anymore. What's the point? Worry is just, it's like paying a debt you don't owe, right? But thanks for the question. And the last question for today's show was sent in by a friend of mine who wishes to remain incognito. Dear Ani, what is your recipe for the perfect whiskey sour? Well, my darling friend, it is personal preference, and I'm going to tell you my personal favorite. By the way, did you guys know how sour drinks evolved? They were initially created to fight off scurvy among the British Navy sailors in the 1700s by adding citrus juice, you know, vitamin C, to their drinks. So most often, this meant adding lime to rum rations. But not only did these sour drinks ward off disease, the rum and the gin and occasionally whiskey helped to preserve the perishable fruit juice on long voyages. So from there, people thought, it's a little too sour, we'll add a little sugar, we'll add a little more citrus, we'll experiment. And then the result was a more drinkable and tasty beverage. And these eventually came to be known as sour family of drinks. They've remained very popular, but undoubtedly the whiskey sour remains the most notable. For this recipe, my recipe is this: 2 ounces of whiskey, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, fresh, 1/2 ounce or 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup. Just try it with that ratio, give it a taste, and then you're going to dress it with a good cocktail cherry, not the cheap ones. You want to use the Luxardo. Use whatever whiskey you enjoy. So put all the liquids in the shaker, whiskey 2 ounces, 3/4 of an ounce of fresh lemon juice, 1/2 to 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup, and then shaky. Strain, pour into a chilled cocktail glass, dress with a cherry, and enjoy. If it's too sweet, put less simple syrup. If it's not sour enough, put lemon juice. If you want it to be a mixture of citrus, put orange juice. You know, it's a free country, despite appearances to the contrary. Enjoy the whiskey sour. But that is
America powerful again.
My recipe. Okay, folks, it is now time for some weird and wacky tidbits from the anus of history. Now, we haven't done this segment in a while, and peeps have complained about that. So here we go. And in this one, I'm going to try and combine the weird and the wacky tidbits with a little bit of American civics and history. Did you know that a very long time ago, the famous conqueror Napoleon Bonaparte was attacked by bunnies. Yes, bunnies. The emperor had requested that a rabbit hunt be arranged for himself and his men. So his chief of staff set it up and had men round up reportedly 3,000 plus rabbits for the occasion. By the way, people, that's a lot of rabbits. And when the rabbits were released from their cages, the hunt was ready to go. Well, at least that was the plan. What happened was 3,000 plus bunnies charged towards Bonaparte and his men in a vicious and unstoppable onslaught. And here we are. We all thought that Waterloo was the conqueror's greatest defeat. And I wonder, that's probably where Monty Python got the idea of the killer bunny, those of you who are Monty Python fans. Some of the Monty Python stuff has definitely dated, but some of it has not. And the killer bunny definitely has not dated. All right, let's do something here. A little weird and wacky tidbit about booze, because, you know, it is metaphysical martini after all. During the Prohibition in the United States, the U.S. government literally poisoned alcohol. When people continued to consume alcohol, despite its banning, law officials got frustrated and decided to try a different type of deterrent. And I think, if I'm reading this correctly, the deterrent was death. They ordered the poisoning of industrial alcohols manufactured in the U.S., which were the products that were regularly stolen by the bootleggers. And by the end of Prohibition in 1933, the federal poisoning program is estimated to have killed at least 10,000 people. WTF, America, you killed 10,000 people because they wanted a drink. That is just, I curse you all, you terrible people. All right, what else do we have today? And by the way, thank you to all the people that send in these weird and wacky tidbits. I really do enjoy getting them. Let's see. There was something here about, forks. Forks, cutlery. Forks, the widely used eating utensils, were once seen as blasphemous. Now, personally, blaspheming is just rubbish, isn't it? I mean, it's like sin. It doesn't exist. It's something that the church made up. But why were forks seen as blasphemous? Let us investigate this. They were introduced in Italy in the 11th century. And so they were spiked spaghetti twirling instruments. They were seen as an offense to God. Why would an easy way of eating spaghetti be seen as an offense to God? Why? I'd like to know. Well, apparently because they were artificial hands. And as such, they were considered to be sacrilegious. I think I also read quite a while ago that we almost didn't have pumps for pumping water out of mines because the Vatican declared that there was no place where God was not. And pumps create some sort of a void. And that therefore we can't advance industrially. And oh my God, the Vatican, really, I think we should just sack the Vatican, take everything out of the basement and put it in the hands of sensible people so that it can be studied and returned and stored to wherever it needs to be returned and stored. What else? Yes. Oh, this one is about Castro, Fidel Castro. Apparently, the Cuban dictator was targeted to be killed by a large range of foes, including political opponents, criminals, and even the United States, among others. 600 attempts were made on his life. And that included everything from an exploding cigar to a poisoned diving suit. But they didn't get him because he didn't die until the 25th of November, 2016. But the cause of death was not disclosed, but he lived to a good old age. He avoided 600 assassination attempts. I wonder how many assassination attempts have been, carried out on Trump. Quite a lot. I think they're trying to kill him maybe 100 times a day, every single day, in many different ways, and they can't do it. Do you think he has some sort of divine protection because he is protecting Americans on their path to reclaiming their sovereignty? I think that's probably what it is. Yes. Oh, here's something else with the popes. The popes, the Vatican, Catholicism in general. My favorite ragtime. Pope Gregory IV declared war on cats in the 13th century, on the poor little moggies, our little pets. He said that black cats were instruments of Satan. And because of this belief, he ordered the extermination of these felines throughout Europe. Now, ladies and gentlemen, those of you with critical thinking abilities, can you have any idea of how this plan backfired? Yes, I do. It resulted in an increase in the population of plague-carrying rats. Oh, yes, how clever was that, Pope Gregory IV, you big moron. Okay, moving on, here's a little something about Abraham Lincoln. He was quite a chap, you know. I mean, besides being really tall and imposing, he was a wrestling champion, but he was also a licensed bartender. So in 1833, the 16th president of this here United States of America opened up a bar called Berry and Lincoln with his friend William F. Berry, and they opened this up in New Salem, Illinois. But the shop was eventually closed, and very unfortunate to hear this, but the shop was eventually closed when Berry, who was a raging alcoholic, consumed most of the shop's supply. Well, you know, if you're an alcoholic, you probably shouldn't have a liquor store or be a bartender. That's, you know, my advice there. Okay. What else do we have? Oh, this one's about George Washington. Apparently, being the first president of the United States wasn't enough for George Washington in his lifetime. After his term, Washington opened a whiskey distillery. Huzzah! What a noble venture. And by 1799, Washington's distillery was the largest in the country, producing 11,000 gallons of unaged whiskey. But after the president's death, the business was no more. Now that is shame. Why didn't someone take over? Why didn't someone take over? This was the first president of the United States of America. He had a business making whiskey. Someone should have taken that over. What other little historical tidbit came in? Ah, this one is 1826, okay? So we're going back to 1826, to July the 4th. Both U.S. presidents John Adams and Thomas Jefferson passed away on that date within 5 hours of each other. How crazy is that? Now, they were once fellow patriots, but they, yeah, towards the end there, they turned adversaries. But the other interesting thing about this is I think they were also the last surviving members of the original American revolutionaries. Now, that is something very, very interesting. What else do I have here? Let's see. Oh, you know the folk tales about Johnny Appleseed? You know, what a wonderful story that was. And we even learnt about that back in the UK before I became an American, when I was actually British. This folkloric hero was a real person. His name was John Chapman, and his hometown was Leominster in Massachusetts. So they named a street after him, as they should. But the city planners didn't call it John Chapman Street. They thought it would be better to use the more poetic version, his mythical name. So we now go and now we have Johnny Appleseed Lane in Massachusetts. And when I do my tour of the original 13 states and I tour the East Coast, which has been something on my bucket list for a long time, I'm going to go onto Johnny Appleseed Lane and eat an apple, because that's the sort of thing I like to do. Now, let's move it up a bit to sort of common era here. Nixon, Richard Nixon, he was a bit paranoid by all accounts. He wanted to kill a columnist called Jack Anderson, according to NBC News. And his plot included ideas such as putting poison in Anderson's medicine cabinet or exposing the journalist to large amounts of LSD. Thankfully, this plot was abandoned, but if you were in the Secret Service, and the president of the United States came up to you and said, I want this chap murdered because I don't like what he says about me or what I do, how would you react to that? I ask myself that question occasionally. What would you do? Would you say, oh, Señor Presidente, I will do anything you ask? Or would you go, no, I shan't do that. That doesn't make sense. Interesting. Interesting. What else do we have here? Hello, Jenny from Tacoma, who writes in quite often, says, did you know that when the Great Pyramids were built in Egypt around 2560 BC, woolly mammoths were still roaming the earth in Siberia? That is interesting, actually. I visited a website recently that put things into, it gave us a really interesting sense of chronology. It put things in chronological order. And it's amazing, if you don't study your history properly, you miss out on an awful lot, a tremendous difference in awareness from one country to another, advancements from one part of the world to another. Fantastico. And I think the last little tidbit before we move on today, which one shall I pick if it's the last one? Oh my God. Or maybe I'll just pick a few shorties. Oh, you know, people go on about those yo mama jokes. Hey, you know, your mama's so fat or your mama's so this. Well, apparently a yo mama joke was found on a 3,500-year-old Babylonian tablet. And it was considered to be the oldest known joke of its kind. That's kind of fun. And what is the world's oldest known recipe for? Any guesses out there? Well, folks, I'm very happy to tell you, it's for beer. Yes, for suds. It was found inscribed on an ancient Sumerian tablet from around 1800 BC. Now, beer was very simple back in the days, so I don't think it was a very long recipe. It really was more along the lines of take an earthenware jug, go to the part of the river where the water is cleanest, put some stuff in it and let it ferment, and then go back in 2 weeks later and stick a reed in it and drink it up and see what it tastes like. So I want to compliment the people who originally created beer. What a wonderful, wonderful thing you did for our planet. So in many places, water was not safe to drink, but turning it into beer made it safe, and we applaud you for that. In ancient Egypt, here's a little tidbit, another ancient Egypt tidbit. Killing a cat, even accidentally, was considered a capital crime. Do you know, people, there's so much we don't know about the ancient Egyptians and all of their genetic modifications, not of food, but of bodies that would house souls for living on this planet. We do know they revered their cats. I think a great many of their cats were not cats as we know them today. They were literally enlightened deities. And to be honest, if you look at your little moggies today, they are rather aloof, aren't they? I mean, dogs are not aloof. Dogs are your friends. They'll do whatever you want. But cats, you piss them off, and yeah, you can see there's some royal Egyptian deity lineage there. And what else do we have for a quick little tidbit before we move on? This one is about ancient Rome. Gladiators were often used for product endorsements, similar to today's sports star. Well, of course they would be. I can see how that would happen. Use this liniment oil. Bigus Dicus uses it, and he never has any pain after combating 17,000 people in the arena. You know something else the gladiators were used for? Because they were fine specimens of men, all muscular and hunky and, you know. Rich women, Roman women, would pay a lot of money to be pleasured by Roman gladiators. Interesting. What fun. And what is the last little tidbit today? Again, this is a, hello. Yes, I don't know who this is from. I can't read. This is an actual letter that somebody sent me. Something about the pyramids of Egypt that were originally covered in polished white limestone, known as casing stones, reflecting the sun's light and making them shine brightly. Well, of course, we can all believe that, because why would they be unpolished? It's in the same way as when we look at castles today. you know, old castles in England, Europe, wherever. Everything looks really dingy, but they were all whitewashed and painted with glorious colors. It's just that they're old now. We didn't do the upkeep. Thank you for sending in those wired, you know, those little weird tidbits, people. You know, I've got one more. I've just got to share this one with you. In 1952, Israel offered Albert Einstein the presidency, but he politely declined. Well, there you go. Would things have been different in that part of the world if Einstein had become the president of Israel? I do not know. Well, I hope you enjoyed that trivia knowledge, because it may well enhance our lives in ways yet undecided. So folks, this coming Monday is Memorial Day. To some, it's just another day off, but there is so much more to it. So let's explore that. And thanks to our friends at history.com for sharing this information. Memorial Day is an American holiday observed on the last Monday of May, honoring the men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military. Memorial Day this year occurs on Monday, May 27th. Originally, hello, Arnie, can you talk? Yes, I can talk. Originally known as Decoration Day, it originated in the many years following the Civil War and became an official federal holiday in 1971. Many Americans observe Memorial Day by visiting cemeteries or memorials, holding family gatherings, and participating in parades. Unofficially, it marks the beginning of the summer season. Now, let's look back. The Civil War, which ended in the spring of 1865, claimed more lives than any conflict in U.S. history and required the establishment of the country's first national cemeteries. By the late 1600s, Americans in various towns and cities had begun holding springtime tributes to these countries, to these countless fallen soldiers, decorating their graves with flowers and reciting prayers. It is unclear where exactly this tradition originated. Numerous different communities may have independently initiated the memorial gatherings, and some records show that one of the earliest Memorial Day commemorations was organized by a group of formerly enslaved people in Charleston, South Carolina, less than a month after the Confederacy surrendered in 1865. Nevertheless, in 1966, the federal government declared Waterloo, New York, the official birthplace of Memorial Day. And that was first celebrated, I do not know why I'm having so much trouble with the English language today. Oh, wait, I know why. It's this big drink I'm drinking throughout the show. I'm a little bit tiddly. May the 5th, 1866, was chosen because it hosted an annual community-wide event during which businesses closed and residents decorated their graves of the soldiers with flowers and flags. So on May 5th, 1868, General John A. Logan, leader of an organization for Northern Civil War veterans, called for a nationwide day of remembrance later that month. And so the 30th of May, 1868, was designated for the purpose of strewing flowers and otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in defense of their country during the late rebellion and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, and hamlet churchyard in the land. And the date of what was then Decoration Day was chosen because it wasn't the anniversary of any particular battle. So Memorial Day, as Decoration Day gradually came to be known, originally honored only those who were lost while fighting in the Civil War. But during World War I, the United States found itself embroiled in another major conflict, and the holiday evolved to commemorate American military personnel who died in all wars. And now we include in that World War II, the Vietnam War, the Korean War, Iraq, Afghanistan, and I bloody well hope we're not going to have a World War III, because I don't want to commemorate that. So for decades, Memorial Day continued to be observed on May 30th as the, you know, as the date General Logan had selected for the first Decoration Day. But in 1968, Congress passed the Uniform Monday Holiday Act, which established Memorial Day as the last Monday in May in order to create a three-day weekend for federal employees. The change went into effect in 1971, and the same law also declared Memorial Day a federal holiday. So now cities and towns all across the United States host Memorial Day parades each year, often incorporating military personnel and members of veterans organizations. Some of the largest parades take place in Chicago, New York, and Washington, D.C. Americans also observe Memorial Day by visiting, you know, cemeteries and memorials. Very nice and quiet and reverential, I would say. Some people wear the red poppy in remembrance of those fallen in war, a tradition that began with a World War I poem. And on a less somber note, many people take weekend trips or throw parties and barbecues on the holiday. It's a long weekend. It comprises of the Saturday and the Sunday and the Monday itself. So this does sort of, for Americans, unofficially mark the beginning of summer. And while we honor those who fought and died for their country, let us remember that the best way to honor their passing is by being the type of citizen the American ideal deserves. Strong, sovereign, self-sufficient, honorable, courageous, moral compass intact, and somebody who takes an interest in the running of their government from local to state all the way to federal. That is the only way we are going to pull ourselves out of this mess and honor anyone's sacrifice. There is a war being fought right now in the heavens and in this universe. It has nothing to do with Democrats, Republicans, or any of that. It is about common sense versus depravity, the light versus the dark. And if you can't see that, you're looking in all the wrong places. Normally I would do a very silly poem because I enjoy writing them and apparently you enjoy listening to them. But in honor of all those who fell, I would like to read to you In Flanders Field by John McCrae. Here we go. In Flanders fields the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard among the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders Field. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If ye break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders Field. My darlings, we have lost so many souls to war. We all serve our country believing that we're doing the right thing, and sometimes we are, and sometimes we are not. But the world is changing in ways that most of us can't put into words. There is never a good reason for war in a spiritually centered universe, where people see each other as manifestations of the divine God, where people treat each other as sacred souls and every conversation is a sacred interaction. Please turn off your televisions. Stop identifying with politicians. Stop worshiping celebrities. Spend time deep in your soul and learn to make live within you the holy spark that is the Holy Spirit. We must return to our spiritual center if we are going to save this country and this planet from New World Order, which is nothing more than a Luciferian construct of eternal slavery and depravity. Well, my darlings, on that happy note, we've done it again. I finished my drink, and I finished it very fast, and I'm really tiddly, and I don't care because the show's almost over, but I did finish it. And that does mean the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed listening in as much as I enjoyed recording it, because I had a blast. And today's real-life cocktail was something I came up with. It's a little variation of something else. I'm calling it the Fresno Firefly. And here's how you make it. You get yourself 2 ounces of good silver tequila. I use Hornitas, but just make sure that it's 100% agave and not cheap shit. 3/4 of an ounce of Cointreau. And it must be Cointreau. Cointreau tastes like Cointreau. It doesn't taste like Grand Marnier. It doesn't taste like Harlequin. It's got to be Cointreau. Then 1 ounce of freshly squeezed lime juice. And then get yourself 4 ounces of Modelo Especial beer. And for a garnish, you need a lime wheel. Coat the rim of a highball glass with salt or tajin. Fill it, not gin, tajin, that spicy thing. Fill it with ice. Set it aside. Then get your tequila, get your Cointreau, get your lime juice, put those in a shaker with ice, and shaky, shaky, shaky until well chilled. Strain into the glass you just prepared, top it with beer, garnish it with lime. It is so refreshing. Remember, folks, cocktails are great if they are an occasional treat. If you use top quality ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, one drink is all you need. And with summer on the way, I strongly suggest drinking lighter cocktails. And the easiest way to do that is to halve the amount of alcohol and make it into a long drink by adding club soda or a nice light beer. I am Ani, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was a Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Mwah, mwah, mwah. Thanks to mysticalwares.com for making possible the intergalactic distribution of the show. You guys rock. You also paper and scissors. Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, online or on location. You'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Until we meet again, let's do something every single day to make America great again. And let's do that by letting the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.